Hello, I'm Conrad Taylor and it's July 2016. I manage an email discussion list called KIDM, which stands for Knowledge, Information, Data and Metadata Management. What follows is a recording of a conversation with two of the list members, Sue Myberg and Bob Bater. Bob and I met Sue online in 2010 in the context of a discussion on LinkedIn hosted by the Chartered Institute of Library and Information Professionals in the UK, CILIP. That discussion, which was started by Mark Field, was called The Fragmentation of the Information Professions. And we note there is a renewed interest in this topic in 2016, 6 years later. Now, Sue Myberg is from Cape Town and she lives in Australia. And her holiday visit to London provided the first opportunity for Sue and Bob and I to meet face to face. Here we're exploring a vision of what might be a unified information and knowledge meta-profession fit for the 21st century. I should explain, Sue was looking after a flat and a dog while the owners of both were on holiday, and the pattering sound that you hear through this recording is the dog's claws on the wooden floor. The curtain rises. I'm sitting here with a bowl of fruit, oatmeal biscuit and some cheese with Bob Bater and Sue Myberg. And we kind of met online. We did first meet, and I can't remember how many years ago it was that Mark Field started that discussion on the CILIP LinkedIn. Mm. Was it 5, 6 years ago, something like that?
Does it feel
like
something that? In that order.
Yeah. Where he was raising doom and gloom about the information professions, as he called them, going to hell in a handbasket. And as you know, we had a series, there was a long, I think there were 130 or 140 emails in there.
It was a very active conversation.
It was. And why I was interested in your participation, Sue, because we then started corresponding off list.
Privately.
You were finishing off your PhD at the time, were you not?
Or no, I hadn't
finished. You had finished.
And I was nearly finished that book of which I sent you a copy.
Yes.
A lot of which was based on work I'd done for my PhD. No. In fact, my PhD was an expression of my whole life in the profession, kind of a thing.
But the thing was that you had been examining the nature of the education, the intellectual formation of people who work in, now how would you describe it, in librarianship specifically or in the information system?
Well, the
system
phrases,
more generally?
Yeah, the phrases very much become library information science, and I just use that phrase as a standard, however non-descriptive and misleading it might be. I don't believe there's a library science and I don't believe there's an information science. It's just dark. So the information professions, I've come to like the phrase information interventionist the most.
Okay.
Which isn't widely used, but that sort of sums up more how I see the professions.
That's quite an interesting umbrella term, I think, don't you?
Yes.
Yes.
Yes, yes indeed. And my particular relationship to the fragmentation of the profession discussion that Mark Field started, I stayed rather at the in the sidelines of that because, not I don't have any bad feeling, but we have a colleague called Ed Mitchell, I think you met Ed Mitchell. He, 2 years prior to that, to Mark Field starting that discussion, had set up a sort of a community bulletin board type discussion group thing for CILIP.
For CILIP, yes.
For CILIP. And he invited me to try it out because he wanted to, I'd known Ed for a number of years. So I went on it and I thought, what do I feel strongly about for the profession at the moment? And I said, I thought librarians were selling them, and information people were selling themselves short by not bothering to peek beyond the library walls. Because I was trained as a librarian, I'm a chartered librarian, and I worked all my professional life outside of public libraries, not in public libraries at all. In business and commerce and industry.
Immediately after library school, I went straight to be a technical librarian because my basic, my first qualification was in industrial chemistry. So when I graduated from library school, it seemed sensible that if I went into any library work of any kind, that it would be have a technical slant because of my technical background in chemistry.
Mm.
So yes, I had worked in and built up a technical library for a Canadian firm of consulting engineers. And I thought we were wasting or missing a great opportunity in not trying to apply our skills outside the library.
Mm.
That was my contribution to that first edition of the bulletin board. And it was during that that I thought, why aren't other people working outside the library giving their skills? I could see the information around me in the business and commerce and industry was crying out for organisation of some kind.
Mm.
And so I contributed to the bulletin board, and I attracted one or two replies, and then nothing. I was very pleased to see Mark Field start a discussion on LinkedIn back a couple of years later, but I felt that that I didn't have a lot more to contribute than Mark was doing at the moment, because he really got the discussion going that I wanted to get going 2 years before. So I thought, I'm not going to steal any of his glory. I'll sit on the sidelines and just be an observer, essentially. So I might have contributed once or twice to it, but it was quite extensive.
Well, I was drawn to this conversation from two major points of view. The one was that in my long and varied and intercontinental career in the field, I had either worked as or taught in a wide range of areas. I had taught cataloguing, I had taught systematic and analytical bibliography, I taught information retrieval, records management, corporate information management, knowledge management. I designed a master's program and was program director, of course, in knowledge management, internet communication strategies, business communication and technology. And I was constantly struck, even from my very early days as a neophyte librarian, by the similarities between the fields, which were artificially separated largely by journal publication and by the professional associations, each of which had a vested interest in keeping the professions apart.
Right.
And very few attempts at melding them has ever been successful because of entrenched political interests. And an example I was going to use was that between records management and archival science, and in general, the archival people, the archivists, are much better educated than the records managers, who often have left school at year 10 and been filing clerks and gradually developed a more comprehensive understanding of document and information flows within organisations and so on and so forth. Whereas the archivists very frequently had a master's degree in history or similar, and then did a master's degree in archival science, which was far more thorough and in-depth. So that was one point of view, which was then supported by research done in Australia suggesting records management as a continuum, the so-called continuum theory, which said that there is no distinct point at which a record that is the record of a business transaction ceases to be what it is. So you have records being created in an organisation, and finally, many of them, those that are considered to have significant long-term cultural, social, historical value, end up in an archives. But, you know, otherwise there is no, you can't actually draw a distinction at any particular point.
Mm.
And I quite like that idea. So that was the one major thing that drew me into it. The second was my own personal obsession with the notion, and this came in the first year that I ever studied in the field, was the lack of an operational definition of information for this field. And this is what led to my PhD, which was called Defining Information in the Site of Struggle, because it is a lot of it is around vested interests, around capitalism, around technology, around the different professions and so on, however you define information, which, as you may well know, is often used synonymously with technology.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, there are many definitions of information depending on what field you happen to be in. If you're in physics or looking at black holes, information means one thing. But if you're in our field, you need something that works for the kind of work that we do. And I ended up with perhaps rather simplistic definition, which suggests that knowledge is individual and in everybody's head and is unique to that individual, and that's generally agreed. That knowledge is constructed or created or produced in a whole variety of ways from the second we are conceived, genetically and through perhaps the diet of the parents, the sounds, and so on and so forth. The individual personalities, competencies, characteristics will all affect what information is taken on board and taken to heart and provide some part of the structure of that knowledge in a person's head. And then after a child is born, there's the environment, there's direct experience through what Aristotle claimed to be the only ways to get knowledge, which were the five senses, which, as we know, is the paradigm for the scientific method and research in the natural sciences. But we also know that there are other kinds of knowledges. We are aware of spiritual knowledges and knowledge of art and music and so on and so forth that aren't articulated in the scientific method. So we can disagree with Lord Kelvin, who said if it can't be measured, it's not knowledge, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And so, to me, information then is that part of our knowledge that we choose to share with certain individuals in certain circumstances and to represent it in certain ways. And of course, one the major way in which we represent information is in language, which is culturally defined sounds. The sounds that we make are purely symbolic. As ek Afrikaans praat, julle kan nie verstaan nie. Si je parle en français, si vous parlez français aussi, c'est facile, mais so on.
Yeah, Christa.
Okay, got the message. So we all make different noises and understand if we can decode them. So language itself is a representation, and alphabet, of course, is yet another representation. It's a representation of a representation. But it is one way in which we can have recorded information, which helps, if you wish, to overcome spatiotemporal constraints.
Mm-hmm.
So we have been marvellous in that way. We've developed language, and Steven Pinker has suggested we all have that instinct, that capacity for developing language. And then there are various theories around linguistics and semiotics and so on that suggest ways in which our brains work in relation to the language we know and how we are able to construct it, and our vocabularies and so on and so forth, syntactics and semantics. And then we're able to record it. And it's our role as information professionals, in my opinion, has been very much around those records of information. But what we really do is not look after those records per se. And it's very much what Bob was saying, and using public libraries as the paradigm, the archetype of a library is also a fascinating one and so common in the literature. Our job is not to look after only those records, which are a technology, they're a tool.
Mm-hmm.
But our job is to assist in the conversation between somebody who had those ideas that have been expressed in some way, music, language, maths, whatever, that have been recorded, and then can be further communicated to somebody who will understand them. So it's all to do with the idea transmission, if you like, from one head to another, and our role within that transmission.
Okay. If I can sum that up, I think that actually all three of us around this table agree with that way of looking at things, that knowledge is something that is, if you like, in your head, it's acquired through experience, and the information is the way in which you make it into a form for communication. And am I right in thinking, Bob, that this goes back to the very root of the conversations through which the ASLIB IRM network was constructed?
Yes.
And Liz Orner is one of the people that's propagated this idea of the relationship between knowledge and information. Want to go in?
Yes, yeah. Liz Warner is, and I think I was explaining earlier on my viewpoint on this, that knowledge and information are inseparable, the one feeds upon the other, it's an interactive association. But one of the things that the ASLIV IRM network tried to do as soon as it was formed was to agree some definitions. First of all, what information resource management was, right? And secondly, what information management was. Yeah, because they were both relatively new terms at the time. Now, just as background, I might say that this ASLIV IRM network was formed from out of the work of an American guy called Woody Horton. Info mapping, I think, was the approach that he had, and several of those who had attended a seminar of his, which he held at ASLIB in 1991, I suspect it was, were so keen on the ideas that he was putting forward that we decided to form a group. So the ASLIB IRM network was formed in May, I think, 1992.
And I should point out that ASLIB IRM network then transformed and then transformed and is now, well, Netix is carrying the flag, as it were. It's a different animal now, but that's the kind of lineage.
Okay.
The IRM network went on till about 2000, I think, and then it became KIMNET, Knowledge and Information Management Network, KIMNET. That continued under the aegis of ASLIB for several years, and I can't remember the exact year, but at a certain point, our membership decided they wanted to be independent of ASLIB. Or to be an independent group.
A community of interest, I suppose, would be the knowledge management term you'd use by.
And so they sort of made a universal or unilateral declaration of independence, left ASLIB and became Netix, Network for Information and Knowledge Exchange. Same group of people, much the same topics as KIMNET had covered, but independent of ASLIB. So that's the potted history of it. But I might say during all of that, I played quite a role on the management committees of all three organisations at the appropriate time, but it never entirely satisfied me because I was interested more in the commercial, if you like, use, the use of information and knowledge in business and commerce, and the techniques of whether library and science and information science exists as a separate discipline, I don't want to argue about that. But the techniques that come out of that sort of training, like classifications, taxonomies,
absolutely,
and ontologies to actually support them and from which you derive taxonomies, that's the work I wanted to do. And I wasn't getting a lot of that by being a member of KIMNET and Netix. Now, let me go back a little bit more and say that when I graduated from library school, I joined what was then the Library Association, which subsequently became CILIP. But again, it was public library oriented, and my interests were in technical librarianship, and I didn't find a lot of support for that in the Library Association at the time. So I immediately joined the Institute of Information Scientists, who were predominantly practitioners working in the industrial and commercial sectors. And I stayed with the IIS until it became unsupportable for some reason. And in 2004, I think it was, it amalgamated with the Library Association to form CILIP. So I had great hopes, and my other colleagues who were members of the IIS at the time had great hopes that we'd flourish there. But to be honest, it was years before we started to make an impact and open other people's eyes in CILIP, that there were uses, applications for what we do outside of libraries. Okay, so in a way, we remain closet IIS members. And that was one reason why when the International Society for Knowledge Organisation, ISCO, formed the UK chapter, I put my money on ISCO UK instead, and I retained my membership of Netix for a while. I transferred all my activities to ISCO UK because they were doing exactly what I'd wanted to do for years, which was focusing on knowledge organisation systems, classifications, taxonomies, thesauri.
Well, I know exactly where Bob's coming from, because I found myself in the ridiculous position of belonging to 7 or 8 professional associations at one time. And, of course, the membership fees for all of them were pretty substantial, because I belonged to ACES, the American Society, because I had to have an international perspective, being in little old Australia and previously little old South Africa, the American Society of Information Science. And then I belonged to the Australian Library Association, which then became known as the Australian Library and Information Association, under the ruse that they were going to be the umbrella organisation, which has never actually transpired.
We've heard that story before somewhere.
And then there's separately the Records Management Association of Australia, the RMAA, and the Archival Society of Australia, or Australian, ASA. And the list goes on. And then also belong to an outfit in the States called the Information Resource Management Association, IRMA. And at one stage, I was still a member of SALIS, which was a South African one. Anyway, I mean, it just all became quite ludicrous.
Well, that illustrates perfectly the fragmentation of the profession. That there are so many professional organisations you felt you needed to be a member of.
Sue was holding it all together by being a member of all of them.
Trying hard. And one of the several things that emerged is the extent to which the American view of librarianship and public librarianship in specifically is a very dominant metaphor throughout not only the US, but the UK and its colonies, the Commonwealth. This philosophy of the public library as a poor man's university and all that kind of stuff is very much from the US. And there were the guild libraries and so forth that you had here, the penny libraries and so on and so forth, but that notion of the tax-supported free public library was very much an American idea. Yeah. And only reached Cape Town in 1952, for example. It was quite late. It was sort of post-Carnegie and so on. So in my view, we have to recognise that not only synergy exists, that the parts are greater than the whole, but I see now there's a meta-profession, if you like. And one of the things that I tried to do within my career is try and establish what the core curriculum would be for such a meta-profession that could produce graduates who could work in any of the areas that we mentioned. They could, if you like, become public librarians, special librarians, work completely outside of library focus and work with information flows within organisations, both the documents and the informal, which takes you into the knowledge management and so on and so forth, and through to even galleries, museology, archives, all of that kind of thing, because essentially you're dealing with the information and the artifacts that record that information. And then, of course, the technology that helps support and manage. Now, of course, a lot of librarianship thinking is very much orientated around the book as object. Mm. But the object is now dissolved in the digital world. So that has really exposed us completely.
Yes.
And especially in the new countries, if you like. You know, when I come to Europe, every country has such a legacy of wonderful libraries with wonderful parchment manuscripts and all that kind of stuff. There must still be people who need to learn how to read the calligraphy of the period and all that kind of specialisation. The need for that kind of thing doesn't exist in Australia. We'd import an expert from somewhere to do that, but it is not required on a daily basis, if you like. Whereas there are other skills and competencies that they do need. So my take on it ultimately was, one of the most important things that an information interventionist needs to know is the processes by which knowledge is created. And for that, they need to examine how knowledge can be created, not only in the so-called creative industries, with inspiration and whatever, but also how it's constructed in each of the Aristotelian disciplines that we still abide by, the humanities, the social sciences, and the natural sciences, and maths, and so forth, because each of those have different methodologies.
Yeah.
And we need to know that and those methodologies if we are able to assess the information that we read as a result. For example, not so long ago there was a case where one of the very large pharmaceutical companies was selling a drug which they said worked particularly on depressed male teenagers. And they reported this in one of the prestigious journals. But they had reported their statistics incorrectly, so it gave the idea that the drug was super effective, whereas in reality it wasn't. And a friend and colleague of mine, who happens to be the pediatric psychiatrist in charge of pediatric psychiatry at the Women and Children's Hospital, was asked to come in as an expert witness to show that the drug didn't have an effect and that nearly 50% or something dramatic of the boys who took this ended up killing themselves. So it was a huge issue, but it was all to do with misconstruing and deliberate, if you like,
manipulation
of the data. So it's very, very important to know how the data is collected, by whom, for what purpose, how it's analysed, how it's interpreted, and to understand those if you want quality information, which is what we want.
Therefore requiring experience in the field, not just how to manage information, but let's say if it's about pharmaceutical matters, then you need the medical expertise as well.
Well, yes and no, but there's no such thing as managing information. You can manage information products. If you actually want to manage the information, you need to understand that content, you need to understand the ideas, and you have to understand how the ideas are constructed. It doesn't mean to say that you have to be a medical specialist. Another example, my son-in-law has nearly finished his specialization in ophthalmology. I know nothing about the medical field or ophthalmology. I did biology. That was 18 years ago, and that's a closer. But Nick has often asked me to read through and copy edit his research papers and his PhD and so on. And I can understand it, and I know exactly how and what and where, and I can understand his stats and everything because I have studied how that works. I don't understand the science itself, if you know what I mean, but I understand his procedure. And so I can make meaning out of it. And communication can only take place if you have made meaning.
Yeah.
If I can mix things up a bit, I'm coming from a different perspective, of course, because I'm coming more from a kind of publishing background and from an information, what we call, another misnomer probably, an information design background, where we're looking at the way in which an information product is constructed and how to do this in a manner which communicates the most effectively. And that's actually the context in which I first met Liz Orner, because she came to speak to the Information Design Association. And the other thing was, having cut myself with scalpels a few times and smelled a lot of cow gum, in the mid-1980s I started to work with Macintosh computers in order to typeset things. Then along came things like the web a few years later, and that's what pulled me into computing. And there was the electronic publishing specialist group at the time within the BCS, which I joined. I'm just someone for whom this is a very big and very practical pencil. But then I became quite interested in the way in which computers could then manage the data that you put into things, like database publishing, for example, where you're producing a catalogue and you're massaging the data through into the typesetting process. So I and some of the other people within Kidham, like David Penfold, we come in from that angle. And we're asking whether the likes of you two would accept us as having a role to play within that definition of the information professions. Because I have to say, the information designers themselves hold themselves generally aloof.
Absolutely. Information presentation and information representation is absolutely fundamental. And I mentioned just now people being able to understand the calligraphy and so forth, the old manuscripts. That is absolutely essential and vital.
As you said, it's important to gain an understanding if you're going to make anything out of it. And it's information design that aids that understanding.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely, I think it's an extremely important part of it.
Well, we could continue speaking about this for hours, but I wonder if there's any interim conclusions about this business of moving forward with the information professions that either of you would care to offer.
The model that I've constructed in my mind is like an inverted fan, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
That there is a core, and I think Bob has referred quite frequently to notions such as ontology, in other words, people's ontological cynosure, their understanding of their reality, their world, and the taxonomy, how it's going to be categorised and labelled, and so on and so forth, which is what we've been doing since time began, before Dewey, who is a devil, but that's a topic for another situation. And out of that come these various strands, of which information design presentation definitely is one, as is linguistics also peripherally, because what one thing we have learned since Aristotle is that no problem can be solved only by looking at one discipline. We know soft systems, methodologies and everything suggest that we have to borrow and blend with others, but nonetheless we are so fundamental dealing with ideas as we do that we need to take on board this bunch of stuff, that we have that overview
in that
and
core,
and then can see where these things fit in and their relationship to one another and well outside of the disciplines, I'd say, like linguistics.
Okay. Yes. Bob, do you want to add anything to that?
I can't really improve upon what Sue said, but yes, indeed, we need to take a holistic view here because I think we've been brainwashed to some extent by the traditional approaches in academia. Maybe Aristotle takes the blame for this, by imagining that these disciplines are separate, and they're not. They interact. Mm. It's like an ecological approach, if you like. You make a little difference in this area, it has impact in other adjoining areas.
Yeah.
And I think that's where our blind spot exists nowadays. And I think we just need to encourage further dialogue between the different fragmented groups in the profession so that we each understand what our relationship is to the other.
Oh, well then, in conclusion, I would suggest, firstly, that we all need to keep talking.
Absolutely.
And secondly, although we three might never find ourselves in the same room again, we should keep talking because we've got the internet.
Yeah. And Skype and stuff.
And Skype and stuff. And so I'd say thank you very much, Sue, for joining in this conversation. Thank you, Bob. And thank you, Santi, for the sound effects of dog pattering. Thank you all.